For as long as I've known the NBA, it's been a stars league. But even among the stars, there's an exclusive club. Russell, Dr. J, Jordan, Kobe. They're all part of a select group that paved the way for the NBA superstar of today. And some even shared secrets with each other along the way. From Spotify and the Ringer Podcast Network, I'm Jackie McMullen, and this is the Icons Club.
It's the Bill Simmons Podcast presented by FanDuel. Take a shot at betting the NBA with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub, filtered by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same-game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting on the Explore page and the Pulse and bet live same-game parlays for every NBA game. Download the app today. Bet with FanDuel, official partner of the NBA. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com. to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of the episode for additional details. You must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com. This episode is brought to you by SimpliSafe. While you refresh your space and take care of your spring cleaning, now's a great time to look into SimpliSafe home security. It's the only home security I use and I can't recommend it enough, especially as we head toward the summer. When people disappear, when they go on vacations, when they go do things, and you don't want to leave your house or your apartment on its own. You deserve some peace of mind. Get 20% off your system today when you sign up for Fast Protect Monitoring at simplysafe.com/BS. There's no safe like SimpliSafe. We're also brought to you by the Ringer Podcast Network. Hope you checked out the new Rewatchables. We did The Player, 30th anniversary of the Robert Altman classic. One of the first great modern Hollywood satires. It has been often imitated, never duplicated. Me, Wesley Morris, Sean Fennessy. Check it out. Coming up on this podcast, we're going to talk some basketball. Kevin O'Connor, Wazdeen Lambry, they're going to come on. We're going to talk about Minnesota versus the Clippers, which a game that was just laden with storylines. And then Brooklyn and the Celtics and what's going to happen there. And then KOC stuck around. And we talked about the bizarre Lakers season, as well as what are they going to do with Westbrook, as well as the worst case scenarios for each team heading into the next 2 weeks. What happens if everything goes wrong for Team X? KOC and I, we break it down. And that's that. First, our friends from Pearl Jam. All right, we're taping this. It is 9:30 Tuesday night. What a night. What a night for people that love basketball. KOC is here. Big Waz is here. I don't know where to begin. It was kind of secretly another Clippers choke job. It was Carl Anthony Towns submitting his resume for the Ewing Theory, and it was just accepted immediately. It was the breakout game for the Ant-Man, who I think, you know, the diehards love, but maybe the casual fans hadn't really seen him in action. It was a classic heat check D'Angelo Russell game. You saw good D'Angelo tonight. And most importantly, KOC, a feel-good Minnesota basketball moment. We haven't had a lot of those. Have they had one? What, since 2004? I can't even remember the last time.
No, it was such a beautiful moment when she glued her hand to the floor.
That's true. And the wind was great, too. Waz, do you want us to clear out of the dance floor and let you dance on the Towns topic? Do you want to do that now or later? What do you got?
You know, this certain nerd NBA circles who debate, like, the efficacy of having Carl Towns as your guy, right? Meaning, like, all right, he's this great offensive player, but he's not the most, I don't know, cerebral cat when it comes to awareness on the court. He stinks it up on defense. And then offensively, like, Ty Lue just, they pants this dude straight up. Like, he looked horrible. I can find his stat line.
It was 11 points. I think it was 4 turnovers, 6 fouls.
It's just like, just really, really bad. And there's people who would argue, like, you'd much rather have a guy like Bam Adebayo or Rudy Gobert, because even though they can't get you 30, they are not going to kill you on either end of the floor the way Towns does on defense. And then, of course, in this game, he leaves the game, and the Clippers basically don't score the rest of the way. It's incredible.
With the Bill Belichick of basketball coaching them, Ty Lue. That was an anecdote dropped during the broadcast in the second half. Unironically, from Kevin Harlan. Some people call him the Bill Belichick of basketball. What people? Can I meet them?
KOC. Insulting to Belichick.
Yeah, that was tough. Yeah. KOC and I were mad.
Minus 14 for Kat in 24 minutes, plus 9 in 24 minutes without him. You're right. Ewing theory candidate there, at least tonight. I mean, Kat's an unbelievable offensive player, but all of his flaws, the lack of composure, the inability to consistently defend, some of the decisions he made, like that last rebound he went for to get that sixth foul. Like, what are you doing in that moment?
Right. How about a fourth foul in the first half of a playoff game, even though we're not allowed to call it a playoff game? It didn't exist. The good thing for him is the game didn't exist. Yeah. Basketball Reference is like, we have no category for this game. Right. It's not a regular season game. It's not a playoff game. KOC, you're the most rational out of the three of us. Waz and I, like, we work hot. We've worked hot from time to time. KOC likes to be a little more rational. That's one game for Towns, right? We can't overreact, right? Because that was the lowercase caps, lower stakes version of some of the worst games we've had in the history of the NBA. I'm talking like, you know, John Starks game 7. I'm talking about DJ going 0 for 14 in game 7 of the 1978 finals. And I wrote down a couple, actually. James Harden game 6, 2017. Kmart 2003 finals game 6, 3 for 23 against Tim Duncan, who almost had a quadruple double. We've had some Hall of Fame stinkers on big stages. This is like the little pigs in a blanket appetizer version of it, but really bad. Can he bounce back from this?
I think he needs to learn from it. I mean, he's in year 7, 26 years old. How long are we going to talk about his lack of experience before it turns into consistency on the big stage? And for Kat, you would hope this is a learning experience for him to stay chill. You know, don't commit stupid fouls. Don't put yourself in a position where the officials can call a foul on a night they're calling everything. So for Karl Anthony Towns, you know, people made fun of him for calling himself the MVP, rightfully so. But ultimately, this guy is an unbelievable offensive talent. He did get better defensively, too. So there is a path forward for him to continue to get better. And in this series against the Grizzlies, he's going to have his hands full, though, against Jaren Jackson Jr., against Steven Adams, against that Grizzlies front line. So for Kat, like, that growing up needs to happen really fast.
See, you used a great word there, KOC. You said composure. There just was none. And I think that the counterfactual, or not even the counterfactual, the opposite was happening when Naz Reid came in the game. Where he's like, wait, I'm way bigger than Nicola Batum and the Morris twin. I don't need to press. I can just get to my spot, shoot directly over a guy who's 6'6". Karl Towns looked to be pressing the entire freaking game. And, you know, some of the credit has to go to Ty Lue. And they did what I thought was brilliant. It wasn't just that they did the stuff where they got Zub hanging out by the basket, not guarding the worst three-point shooter on the Wolves, and then they're putting just a wing on Towns. I thought that was cool. I thought just the idea of mixing it up against a guy who's clearly frazzled and clearly hasn't diagnosed the defense and what he wants to do on a possession-by-possession basis. That was the dope thing that Ty Lue did to me. However, as great as he was with the defensive game plan, Minnesota is the best offense in the NBA by offensive rating. They played good enough defense to win tonight. What they did on offense down the stretch, I don't understand. And Ty Lue, honestly, is supposed to be an offensive coach.
They took too long to get Zoo back in the game, I thought.
It was a bad last 6 minutes for him. Yeah, I don't want to dump on Town too much because there was a lot of good Minnesota subplots.
Absolutely, yep.
But I thought it was hilarious that A-Rod was there. A-Rod, part owner. That was his first game, is watching his high-priced star just completely melt down. And, you know, I think I always feel this way. Two things I love, especially as I get older with basketball. I love experience in playoff games. And I love home court advantage. I value it. Like, I know we're going to talk about Brooklyn later. I value having that game 7 at home against Brooklyn. I don't think it matters in every arena. I think it matters in some. I thought it really mattered tonight, especially like where you really see the home crowds matter is when you have the young athletic team like that Minnesota team. Like somebody like Ant-Man, you're getting like superpowers. It's like going through you like electricity. There was that moment when near the end with Ant-Man when he's at the top and he waved away the pick and he had Morris on him and Miller saw it. Miller's like, got to use your speed. Just go by him. And he went by him. Zubac came over. He just went flying into him like a running back. It was just genuinely exciting. KOC, I irrationally love Ant-Man. I just love him. I love watching him. I think he's like thrilling. He's exciting. He reminds me, he's not a basketball player. It almost is like watching a football player who knows how to play basketball. Some of the stuff he does is so unique. Can you even, who do you compare him to? Who is he like? Is he like anybody?
I mean, right now in the NBA, downhill, muscular. I mean, it's, I hate to even invoke the word LeBron, but it's the type of body. It's just so
like
unusual.
6'4" LeBron?
Yeah, it's just so unusual on the basketball court. And the fact that he's turned into the player that he has at only 20 years old right now. I mean, because it's not just the scoring. Even his passing has improved in his now his second season out of Georgia. So with him at this stage, like we're talking about some of the flaws with Cat. With who he is and how he needs to improve as a player. But Anthony Edwards at age 20, if he continues to ascend, he's going to grow into the type of guy that Karl Anthony Towns needs by his side as the leader, the vocal guy, the alpha on the team, where Cat can play off of that. And for Edwards to be in the spot that he is right now, it's pretty outstanding. And I hope he continues, you know, moving forward against Memphis, playing with this downhill attacking mentality, because he gets to the rim a lot, but I think he's equipped to get to the rim even more. I think it was 37% of his baskets came at the rim this season. If he can get that up to 45% or so, closer to even half in a series against Memphis, that's going to be a real positive indicator for Memphis, for Minnesota.
And he had some knee stuff too, it seemed like, last month and the month before, where, and they were writing about it. They were like, he was just had some knee soreness stuff. The Waz, with Ant-Man, when you think about the fearlessness, there was that moment, they're up six, there's like 70 seconds left, and Russell does the driving kick to him, and he's wide open. And you could feel like through the TV, the arena is like, if he makes this three, it's actually going to be mass chaos in the arena.
It's going to be a riot, like an actual one.
And he gets so excited, he airballs it, right?
Right.
But the great thing about him is like, it's not like if that happened to Ben Simmons, he might have gone a spiral, right? Like Ben Simmons, oh my God, I can't believe I missed that. Or even somebody like Towns. I think Towns can get rattled. Ant-Man, like the next play, it was like it never happened. He's like the goldfish swimming around the bowl, which is one of the things I love about him.
Yeah, you got to love his temperament. I've been in the tank for him. Basically, once I realized that the jump shot was there, in the sense you couldn't just Tony Allen this kid, like you got to actually get up on his jump shot. And so his athleticism is going to exploit you. And I think these guys who can finish at the cup over length, who can still shoot it, and are faster than everybody, like they're the most valuable commodities in the game, right? That's why it's really exciting that Minnesota has him on the team. And again, to compare him to Karl Towns, I think another thing that is underrated here is like if he's playing with Chris Paul or Kyle Lowry, he's getting the ball in better positions than the guys he has to play with right now. But he needs that, right? Like it's a prerequisite to him being fully realized in his talents and his potential. Whereas Anthony Edwards is like, no, just inbound the ball to me and I'll do the rest. I'll get a shot at the
rim. Don't set me a pick. Get that pick away from me.
I don't need anything. I need nothing. Just inbound the ball. And that's so valuable. And you guys talk about comparison. He kind of reminds me of, and people are not going to remember this because they're not washed up like us, Bill, but he reminds me of Milwaukee Ray Allen. Back when he still had the hops. Back when he still had the quickness, he had the handle. He was shifty like that, and he used to dunk on people too.
Yeah,
obviously,
hell of an actor.
Obviously, we know he's not going to be. We know Anthony Edwards is not going to be able to shoot like Ray Allen because he's one of the best ever. But they do remind me of each other in that sense.
How about like a better Victor Oladipo too? Like a bigger,
yeah, like a taller, better.
Yeah,
the guy that now I'm really dating myself. The guy that he really reminds me of is, this is what young J.R. Ryder was like. This was what UNLV, early Minnesota, ironically Minnesota, but same kind of thing. Just power, speed, athleticism. When he was really feeling it, would feed off the crowd, all that stuff. And it's going to be interesting. Like, on the one hand, he's the perfect guy for Towns. On the other hand, you kind of want to put him with some of the people that were out there, right? Beverly, who's a maniac. Naz Reid, who was completely ready for that game. Vanderbilt. Russell, who the best thing and the worst thing about him is he always thinks he's the best player on the floor in those games. Tonight he was making a shot. Still not one of my favorites. but I do. I just wonder long-term, is Towns part of this, or would that be, will they eventually move the team toward Ant-Man? Is it like a combo thing? I guess we're going to find out. KOC, our guy Verno, is a little worried about heading into a Grizzlies,
he should be,
T-Wolves series for a couple reasons. One, they had really good games this year. It's just like really young, athletic, fun games. But then there's the Beverly factor and some of the stuff Beverly does. And, you know, whether it was going to be Chris Paul or Ja Morant, he's like a hockey enforcer. He's like the guys, the, you know, when your NHL team, you're like, oh man, that guy's in the series. Oh, I know my guy's going to get slashed. Like, so I do think like this has a chance to be a great series. How do you handicap it?
I mean, I'm picking Memphis, and I'd pick him in five or six in the series still, but Minnesota certainly is going to present challenges. And with Beverly, I mean, like, it's just so funny watching it tonight. It's just WWE style, the way he gets excited with the crowd. I love it. But ultimately in this series, though, like the question for Memphis is going to be, can they answer that really aggressive pick and roll defense from Minnesota? They blitz or show in the pick and roll 15 times per game. That's number two in the NBA behind Portland. And ultimately here, like the Bucks and Nuggets are the only other two teams that do it over 10 times. So few teams are that aggressive in the pick and roll. They're switching or dropping. That's what most teams do. And Minnesota's different. And the interesting thing here is that the Grizzlies, one of the things they're worst at doing on offense is scoring against the blitz. So Ja Morant scores only 0.86 points per chance, according to Second Spectrum, when he's blitzed or showed against in the pick and roll. That's 17th of 18th of the players that have been against 200 times being showed or blitzed against. So ultimately here, for Memphis and Ja, this is, again, another area and opportunity for growth. How can you answer a pick and roll defense that is being aggressive against you?
Well, and I think with Triple J, he's got to be able to make some plays as well, which hasn't always been his strong suit, right? Making plays with the ball. But I think there are going to be some opportunities there. But, you know, Memphis is another well-coached group. Their guy's going to win Coach of the Year this season, and I think it's for good reason. He's always got putting them in good spots, and he's got them prepared. And I think they'll have adjustments for a blitz pick and roll in a seven-game series. I personally wanted to see the Clippers play them because I wanted to see a young team have to problem solve against such a veteran-laden group. I thought that
against
was
the against
cool.
the Bill Belichick of basketball. Like, what are they going to have in their sleeve for him?
Against the Bill Belichick,
it's Belichick Jr.
of round ball. Yeah. I wanted to see that, but, you know, this will be a great treat as well. Just the amount of talent and athleticism that'll be on display. And I think both teams are going to have tremendous home crowds. Minnesota was, they were up for the challenge.
That was awesome.
Today. And I'm sure Memphis is going to have incredible crowds too. So this will be a great, great series. And no, I do want to say one thing about D'Lo, because he was terrible in the first quarter. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, here we go with him.
Switch everything on him. He's going to do a step back routine. It's going to be horrible. But then he started operating in the pick and roll, getting people in jail, hitting stuff in floater range. He made his threes. I was like, okay, this is the theory of the guy that his cult following on the internet is always screaming at people about. But so it was nice to see it for the last three quarters. Like, without him being that, like, a legitimate all-star level player, they don't win this game.
I agree with that. He's one of my least favorite players, even though he seems like a nice guy. Just, I don't like his game. I judge him by the whole, would he be fun to play with?
I'm still pissed about what he did to Nick Young.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, that was a long time ago
just
now.
Just kidding. Water under the bridge, guys.
That was
just
a long time
kidding.
Ago.
He just broke up the guy's relationship.
D'Lo's.
It's fine. He was young.
D'Lo's underrated. I think he's underrated. Super efficient ISO score, pick and roll, dribble handoff. He does what the Minnesota Timberwolves ask him to do, and he does it very well. This year, they put him in this rover role off ball on defense, and granted, he's still not that good defensively. He was better than he was before, and the bar was low, but at least it's higher now. And I think it's just positive to see that type of progress from D'Lo overall on both ends of the court. He does what the team asks him to do, and he does it well.
I like we'll some see. Of their guys. I like Vanderbilt too. I
oh, Vanderbilt. Love
him. I had awesome. Him. I did a FanDuel same game parlay where I had him with the over for the rebounds. He, of course, he had 3 points, but he had like 12 rebounds. Really good defense. And he's just like, he's a playoff guy. So's Naz Reid. Like they have, yeah. So's Beverly. You go down the line, Beasley, who wasn't really effective tonight, but he'll have a game in a 7-game series where he scores like 32 and hits 6 threes. You're like, who's this guy? Why doesn't he make more money? And it's like, yeah, you're catching him on a good night. But they have those guys. We're going to take a break and come back. Let's talk about the Clippers and then the other game. Hey, in the NBA play-in tournament, we just found out there's no sure things except one. Bet at least $20 in same-game parlays on FanDuel Sportsbook, and you'll get an instant bonus, win or lose. That's right. Not only do you get to enjoy the NBA's best, or semi-best, duking it out for the right to advance to the playoffs, but FanDuel is giving all customers a bonus for getting in on the action. Oh, and the more you bet, the better the bonus. That's how this stuff works. I was thinking, now, FanDuel's got to approve this one, but I was thinking about, I like Charlotte, as we just mentioned on the podcast with Waz and KOC. We can do an alternative spread with Charlotte, get them to +7.5. We can get Bridges over 16.5 points, Bridges over 4+ rebounds. We can get Mason Plumlee over 5.5 rebounds and Bogdanovich over 15+ points. Something like that, that gets you over 4-1 odds on FanDuel, which is beautiful because if you do that, the all play-in tournament, if you bet at least $20 the same game parlays on FanDuel Sportsbook, you get an instant bonus, win or lose, up to $100. And the spread is cumulative. You bet 20, you get 10. You bet 15, you get 25. Bet 100, you get 50. You bet 200, you get 100. So maybe mess around with that Charlotte parlay I just played out. Remember, FanDuel is an official partner of the NBA. Great app, easy to use, super safe. You get winnings fast. And if you're new with FanDuel, sign up today with promo code BS to make every moment more. Don't just watch the NBA play-in tournament. Be a part of it. Bet at least $20 in same game parlays. Get an instant bonus, win or lose. You must be 21 plus, present in select states only. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable. Free bets that expire in 7 days. Max bonus $100. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? In Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Connecticut, 888-789-777. In Colorado, Iowa, Indiana, Illinois, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Virginia, 1-800-GAMBLER. In Michigan, 800-270-7117. 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York. Tennessee red line is 800-889-9789. And in West Virginia, 1800-GAMBLER.net. This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer partner of the NBA. It's just what you need to sit back and enjoy the game. And they're also getting fans closer to the game than ever. You can win exclusive NBA prizes like courtside seats, signed memorabilia, and more. I love Michelob because of how light it is. It's only 95 calories with 2.6 carbs. You know what the perfect time for Michelob Ultra is? A little doubleheader, a little NBA doubleheader. Right, first half of the first game. I don't know, West Coast time, that's usually about 5 o'clock, 5:30, perfect time for a beer. You can do it. Grab a pack to enjoy today. Learn more and enter for your chance to win at MichelobUltra.com/courtside, LDA, 21 and up. All right, so the Clippers, yet another collapse for them. A familiar scenario. Yet another agonizing Clippers loss. Just par for the course for them. But yet, the caveat this time around, where they get another game. Mm-hmm. Again, this isn't quite a playoff game. There's no record of it. It doesn't exist. So I don't know if we get to add this to the Clipper playoff collapse or not because it wasn't a playoff game. They're going to play the winner of New Orleans, San Antonio. Just quickly, KOC. Am I crazy or is New Orleans kind of a bad matchup for them? I actually feel like New Orleans can win that game. What do you think?
I mean, that assumes New Orleans beats San Antonio.
Yeah, I'm assuming. I'm assuming they win.
Okay, I mean, that's going to be a good game, too. San Antonio isn't, you know, a slouch team either. But like with the Pelicans, yeah. People talk about not having Zion, but the roster they put together with CJ McCollum, Larry Nance, Jonas Valanciunas, Herb Jones.
Yeah,
they have
our guy, Herb Jones.
I mean, they can beat you.
Herb Jones is hipster Twitter favorite for sure.
I put him on all defense.
You have him second team forward, Bill?
I put him first team all rookie.
I had him
put him over Jalen Green. Fuck Jalen Green. Yeah, I don't care. You're scoring 40 points and your team's 19 and 60.
Wow.
Congratulations.
Bill.
Herb Jones was like guarding dudes in real games.
Bill, when I look back at my ballot this year,
now the Houston people are going to be mad at me. I'm sorry. I like winning players. I'm sorry. Jalen Green will get there. It's just that team was 21 and 61 this year or whatever. Anyway, sorry, Casey.
I was saying when I look back at my ballot years from now, I think what I might regret most, Bill, though, even though I love Herb Jones so much, Jalen Green was awesome.
He was. It's fine.
He's been awesome.
I agree.
Forget about the defense.
Jalen Green, again, another guy who reminds me of Ant Edwards in the sense that
yeah.
he has all of the tools. He's already shown enough touch that he's not going to be a horrible shooter. Nobody can stay in front of this kid.
Nobody.
And mm-hmm. He put some stuff together at the end of the year. I liked what I saw, but mainly, Bill, see, like, for me, the Rockets people got all up in my ass over the Şengün stuff. And it
oh, I like Şengün too.
It made my point for me, though, Bill. There was all the Şengün. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. And I'm like, guys, like, he's never going to be better than Jalen Green. Like, this is, and yeah. Jalen Green was getting nothing. And at the end yeah. of the year, he finally showing people what he's got. And trust me, the volume on Jalen Green has not been part of the Şengün nonsense. So, yeah, I'm with you, KOC. Jalen Green has been incredible to watch.
I'm pro Jalen Green. I just didn't think he was one of the best five rookies. But we also had an iconic rookie class. I think that was one of the best rookie classes we've had. Clippers. Let's say they lose the second playing game. Now, they're going to be home on Friday night. So it's been mixed results. They've had some awesome comebacks. Like, they had mm-hmm. that great comeback against Utah. There's also, there's been some memories like the Rockets game. But it would kind of be incredible if they lost the playing game on Friday and they were out. And that was year three of Kawhi and Paul George, where we look back and we're yeah. like, wow, this is yeah. what. I mean, because the Lakers are getting all the, I mean, people are still talking about the Lakers. KOC and I are going to talk about them a little bit later. But the Clippers, bad luck. Can't do anything about bad luck, but all the stuff they traded away, and this, like, you look at it and it was like, wow, they lose the playing game. That's now a 3-year run of nothing that I can remember, really. So I would say there's some stakes for, even though the game doesn't matter. Who do you like in that game, Wes?
I mean, I think the Clippers are going to find a way to beat the freaking Spurs or the juggernaut Pelicans with CJ McCollum. But, you know, I'm actually just a little bit more bummed out about this year. Just like I mentioned, I wanted them to play Memphis. We're just going to watch them play the exact same series that they did against Phoenix in the yeah. first round from last year. And we know how that outcome is going to go. Phoenix is going to kind of outmatch them. As far as what you said about, you know, what the results have been since putting Kawhi and Paul George together. Look, man, Kawhi couldn't finish two postseasons. You know, what are you supposed to do when something like that happens? And that was part of the risk in bringing him in. He was coming off of major injuries when they brought the guy yep. in. So I don't think anybody should be particularly surprised. And Kevin Arnovitz put something out in ESPN where he was like, look, like a lot of these like non-homegrown super team things haven't really worked out. Like the Clippers right. thing hasn't really worked out. The Brooklyn thing is like, that's been an entire mess since the summer that they signed Kyrie and KD. And so, yeah, it's kind of crazy that it's worked out this way. And again,
how about Philly? Don't forget to throw Philly in there.
We'll get to Philly.
There's a lot of side-eyeing already happening on that team.
And you know, to bring up the Pelicans again, I'll just never forget 2019 at Summer League. Everybody thought David Griffin was a genius because he traded Anthony Davis for a bunch of picks. Everybody was mocking the Lakers for not getting Kawhi Leonard. And like, the Clippers are going to steamroll people and it's over and all of this. And what have been the results of all of that stuff that's happened between those two teams? It's just, you know, it's just a reminder that we need to take a little bit of longer view when we're making assessments of these transactions. Because I'm telling you, the consensus was that the Clippers were going to destroy people in perpetuity forever because they brought in Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. And they got to the conference finals in, you know, a weird way, but that's it.
Yeah.
What was that the consensus at the time, though, with the Clippers?
I thought they gave up a lot. Like, I thought the SGA, SGA in that trade.
Look up all of the stuff that people were writing and saying about that Clippers deal. In fact, I lived it because I was going to Clippers games every single day that first season that they got Kawhi. And there was this inevitability of the Clippers. They got so much wing depth. Kawhi's a Terminator. Like, it was crazy.
But that doesn't,
they've got
that,
nothing to show for it.
That doesn't mean like that. It was right to frame him that way, though, because like with Kawhi Leonard being as injury prone as he is, I think anybody, you know, looking at that from a rational standpoint would know there's a chance this collapses. He gets hurt in one of the biggest games. Granted, they still come back and beat Utah. He misses this entire season. Well, like, we knew after the whole San Antonio shenanigans that this is part of it with Kawhi. He's injury prone and he's on his own timeline and there's nothing you can do about it. And for the Clippers here, though, despite that, the fact, look, we were making fun of Lou being Bill Belichick at basketball, but the fact they're in this position with this team, if you add Kawhi Leonard on top of this, they might be, you know, not the finals favorite ahead of Phoenix, but pretty close to it.
Yeah, I would have them second. All right, Brooklyn, Cleveland. So Brooklyn wins. Kyrie and Durant look awesome. Not surprising. Cleveland plays terrible, except for two guys. Mobley was good, and Garland was good and had some really good moments. They got
so good.
Okoro and Osman, I think, 34 minutes, 0 points. Markkanen had some of the worst moments. I did a tweet about
some KD moments in the third or early fourth where he was like staying it with KD. That I was like, holy hell, I've never seen him.
Yeah, for that. But then he'll just leave him alone for wide open three. Kevin Love is just at the point he's at this point of his career. And Jared Allen, who has a fractured finger on his left hand from 5 weeks ago, just sat this one out. I guess maybe they're saving him for the other playing game because they thought this Brooklyn thing. My point is, you add everything up and it's like, why didn't Brooklyn win that game, you know, by 20? Cleveland's hanging around. There was a couple moments when it seemed like it was going to be like a one possession game. And I didn't even think they were playing remotely well. Kyrie was 12 for 12 at one point. And it just speaks to Barkley said this after the game. Like, I just think this Nets team, it's two guys. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where the rest of it's going to come when they're playing either Boston or Milwaukee, where you're like, KD came out of that game and it was like, oh my God, how long can they make it without KD's going to have to play 44 minutes a game in this Boston series, KOC. Did you see anything from them tonight that made you change your opinion on the Boston Brooklyn thing?
Not change my opinion, but like KD and Kyrie should still be feared.
I agree. I fear them.
No doubt about it. Like they still are a major threat. And with Boston switching near the top of the league and pick and rolls, handoffs, any type of situation, and the Nets being better than just about anybody at scoring after a switch and isolations, that is definitely, you know, contrasting styles here. And Brooklyn is the type of team with KD and Kyrie that can defeat that. Would I pick them in a series against Boston? No, and there's nothing I saw in that game against Cleveland that would increase confidence about that. If anything, I come away from that game feeling even more strongly about the need for Ben Simmons to return, even if it's...
He's not coming back.
Even if it's 15, 20 minutes playing. Per game.
It's not happening.
Maybe he won't, and even if he does, he might not be...
It's not a maybe he won't. He's not playing next round.
But Ben Simmons off the street is going to be like some wound for the...
Well, that's my point.
Nash said today, he's still playing...
He's
isolated workouts by himself. He hasn't even played one-on-one yet. He's not playing in this series.
That's my point. Even if he were to, though, he might not be even finishing games over Bruce Brown. So if you are getting Ben Simmons back, how much is he actually going to be able to offer you? Maybe not a lot at all.
Oh, he's going to offer some really lousy clothes like we saw tonight. Waz, who do you think is favored? Who do you think is favored in that Nets-Celtics series on FanDuel right now? It is now 10 o'clock at night, so this might change.
Probably the Nets, because they're like the public seems to be obsessed with them.
Well, you're wrong. The answer is the Boston Celtics. They're minus 142 favorites over the Nets. So I think it started actually with the Nets as favorite, and I think a lot of people started banging the Celts. KOC and I talk about it later, but there's some Time Lord buzz too for this series. I think we have a much, if I had to say who we're going to see in this series, Time Lord or Ben Simmons, I would have Time Lord as like a minus 500 favorite. But who do you have? You don't have a dog in this race.
I've basically, from watching the Nets the last few weeks, I just, like, this idea that KD is just going to, you know, play 46 minutes a game and, like, that's what's going to work for them. I just don't see it for them. And tonight, the crazy thing, too, is that I'm watching the game and him and Kyrie were so crisp, right? Like, every time Cleveland tried to send two, these guys got the ball out and they got it out quickly. They were executing at such a high level on offense. The Nets' ball movement was incredible tonight. Bruce Brown and Claxton, like, they were attacking the four on threes with impunity. Freaking Drummond looking like a beast on the offensive boards. And, like, they looked like the idealized version of themselves, especially offensively, with this group that's available to play. And they barely got it done against a hampered Cleveland team. Like, I don't know why I'm supposed to be excited about this. I think they're going to be slowed down considerably by what Boston's able to do defensively. And I just think Boston's going to be able to exploit what they do. Like, Cleveland has one guy who could exploit the horrible Nets perimeter defense. And, you know, at the end, Caris LeVert was, you know, he was like, you know what? I'm attacking Kyrie. He's my old teammate.
Thanks for waiting three quarters to do that, Caris. I don't know what you're doing the first 2 hours of the game.
But I just feel like Boston's going to be smarter about attacking those kinds of matchups and they're going to be better at it than, the freaking Cleveland Cavaliers were. So I think they're going to beat them fast. I think they're going to beat them in five games.
Man. All right, settle down, Wes. Don't start putting that on the Celtics. I can't wait for this series. I think we have a couple awesome series potentially. Because you think, like, Boston-Brooklyn's going to be great. Mm-hmm. Philly-Toronto is going to be off the hook.
I've got my eye on that one, Bill.
Minnesota-Memphis. The Golden State series will be really good. Who's not going to enjoy that? So we're just going to have games all the time. I think if you're thinking about making the case for Brooklyn, I would really look carefully at the last quarter and a half of that Cavs game and all the shots the Cavs had, because they were missing open threes. They were missing driving layups just in traffic that were really makeable. They were missing open 15-footers. I liked every single shot they took was a really good shot that their players just weren't good enough and they didn't make. And the Celtics are going to look at that. They're going to look at how involved Bruce Brown was in the fourth quarter. And you know what? If Kyrie and KD get their 60, they still are going to need, I think, like another 55 from the rest of the team. KOC, what happened to Seth Curry tonight?
Is it
just how they're using him, or he's just like really legitimately hurt at this point?
He definitely was playing like he was hurt for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, they
didn't do anything on the ball at all.
Nothing.
He just kind of stands there, though. So I don't know, you know, the way Philly was using him, where he was in constant motion, that's kind of the way you use him.
And the two-man game, he wasn't doing any of that, which he's usually an expert at. He didn't do anything with that. But look, I will say this about Bruce Brown, and I wrote this down. I was like, he was incredible.
He was great. He really was.
Decisive. There was no hesitation. Every time he grabbed the ball, he knew exactly where he wanted to go with it. He threw a couple of those Draymond Green alley-oops to the center, going downhill on the 4-on-3. Like, he looked really confident in what the Nets are asking him to do offensively. And that's how it's going to happen. Like, he's firing them damn corner threes, which, that's the shot you want Brooklyn to take when you have KD and Kyrie Irving on the floor. But, like, he was making a couple of his corner threes, the attacking closeouts. Like, he looked really decisive, which I thought was pretty impressive.
You know what his mistake was? His post-game quote. Did you see it?
No,
what
I didn't see it.
What did he say?
He said, he was talking about the Boston series. I mean, we can't let Tatum get 50. We got to be physical with them. Now they don't have Robert Williams, so they have less of a presence in the paint. We can attack Al Horford and Tice. Them not having Rob Williams is huge.
The war on Tice continues.
Oh my God, Tice.
Wow.
He's taken more drive-by shots than anyone in the last 5 years in the NBA.
Oh, we can attack Tice. Yeah, definitely.
Let me tell you something. Udoka will be mentioning that in the locker room. That is like the kind of thing, because he's been all about toughness this year. And right. you know, making these guys men put chest hair on them. That like is that. Not going to go well, KOC.
Bill, a couple weeks ago, Whit Grosbeck had that quote on WEEI where he's like, this doesn't have to be a record-setting year. He said that to Stevens and Udoka before the season. Like, it's not about winning a championship this year. He wants to build for the future. With all that said, you know, going into the playoffs, it seems like the Celtics are, we go as far as we do. It's not, the goal isn't a championship this year. With that said, though, how crushed?
I don't believe that.
You don't believe it?
No.
You don't believe
it? No, because I think they have a legitimate chance to win the title. They were the
best team in the entire Eastern Conference for three or four months. How could your goal not be getting to the championship? That's ridiculous.
Since January 1st, they've been one of the elite teams, and they have a guy who can go toe-to-toe with every other elite scorer in the league. And I don't know, man. They have home court for the two series against the two teams that are the toughest team in that conference. Milwaukee and Durant, Kyrie.
So you don't believe that the Celtics' expectation is that low? It's actually higher. It is to win a championship. I don't mean the team.
I just think they're smart about how they talk about it. I think this team absolutely thinks they can make the finals. I do. I think they've been killing people for 3.5-4 months. Now it's going to be different. Things slow down in the playoffs. They start trapping Tatum. Marcus Smart gets a little more involved. All of a sudden, there's 2 minutes left. You're down one, and Marcus decides he's going to shoot the three. Like, I know all the ways I'm going to be nervous as it's going, but the stuff they did on the road, how unafraid they are on the road, the defense, and the fact that they just have this really young team that I think is going to, you know, they're not going to wear down during a series. Where I think, like, Durant, the kind of load that he's going to have, not just in this next series, but for all of them, plus Kyrie, who... How many games has he played, Waz? Like 25? And now Kyrie's got to play every other game now? Yep. So I want to see that too. And he said he's fasting. The first game's at 3:30 on Sunday. Like, that's pretty rough.
Listen,
fasting is not difficult.
Oh my God.
Unbelievable. We got to bring back the hottest take. Wow. It's difficult when you're playing a 2.5-hour basketball game.
Wow. KOC, you don't think you need like food to be
water's nice
at the NBA?
Water's good. I mean, he's not technically wrong because Hakeem was kicking everybody's ass when he was like had no food and water some of those times too. Anyway, go ahead, KOC.
That is the greatest thing I've ever heard.
I love it. That's great. We're cutting that out. That was great. KSC's fasting right now. He hasn't eaten how many months?
No, with fasting, when I was at my peak condition physically, I was intermittent fasting every day. Every day. I didn't eat till like 4 at the earliest, sometimes not till 6 or 7. I've done 24-hour fast before and I feel amazing. I feel incredible.
Wow. So it's going to be in Kyrie's quarter for the games.
It's not easy to do. It just takes discipline. And it feels good. I feel great when I do it.
Bill, this is the new agey version of the media guys would be like, how can this guy not make his free throws? It's the fundamentals of the game. KOC is like, yo, fast. Give me a break.
Food, water, overrated.
Get out of here. You guys are professional athletes.
What do we have for Atlanta-Charlotte before we go? Waz, you're the most invested in Atlanta of anyone I know other than Remember Brown.
Yeah, I think Atlanta's going to smoke them tomorrow.
Smoking? Wow, really?
Yeah, they're going
to
smoke them tomorrow, and I think they're going to get that 8th seed. I really do.
Okay. Do you have any case other than Atlanta's going to smoke them? Is it a good matchup? What is it?
I think they're just better. They have more talent. They have more player available talent than whatever Charlotte's going to be able to do. And I think they can guard what Charlotte's trying to do pretty well here. They're not going to get destroyed on the boards like they do sometimes against, you know, better, bigger, more physical teams. I don't think Charlotte's the type of team that beats them to the punch at the point of attack. Like, that's the teams they struggle with, like physicality, who are just straight up out hustling them and out muscling them. I don't think that Charlotte presents that particular problem. And again, Cleveland hobbled with no Jared Allen, which, dude, that paint was so wide. They were getting mauled on the
marketing. Marketing at center is not.
It was terrible. I think Atlanta's gonna get that 8th seed. And yes, I'm in the tank for them, but it's just how I feel. Sorry, guys.
I'm with Waz on Atlanta. I think Trae Young, he's playing the best basketball of his life this season. He leveled up as a 3-point shooter in addition to doing everything else that he does. I think this is going to be Trae's stage in the play-in.
I got to say, I think Charlotte either they're getting 5 points. I think it's either a last second game or Charlotte wins. And it's for what we were talking about earlier with Minnesota. I just like some of their guys in a game like this. Like Rozier's been in a lot of these games now.
Yeah.
Bridges is going to be completely unafraid. Plumlee, who's like weirdly important for them now, like he's all right. He's like a little Zubacchi for them. And I don't know. I'd LaMelo will be the swing factor, right? But if LaMelo's good, and we've seen LaMelo in certain games, especially against the right opponents, where LaMelo all of a sudden looks like one of the best five players in the league. I don't know. I could see him getting into this LaMelo versus Trey thing. I would not write them off. I think Atlanta's been the definition of wonky.
Yes.
Really, I cannot get a feel for them. I don't think they know who their best five guys are. And when we get to, if it's one of those things where they're throwing people at Trey and he starts out slow or anything, honestly, Bogdanovich is probably the only other guy I truly trust on that team. Other than that, I don't know what I'm getting from anybody on that team. So that'd be a good one. I think that would be good. San Antonio, New Orleans, whatever. Could be Pop's last game, I guess. All right, KOC, you're going to be on after this break with me, but then the mismatch and the void on your feed. Waz, what do you got coming? What are you working on?
Of course, group chat coming out tomorrow with me, Rob Mahoney, and Justin Berry on the Ringer NBA podcast feed. Full Court Fits every single Friday on our YouTube. And Weekends with Waz, check out the latest episode that I did with my man Adam Mares from DNVR Sports.
Adam's so good.
The Nuggets season, Jokic MVP case. He's the best Denver person in the world. So check that out when you get a chance.
Who's your finals pick right now?
Suns Bucks. I just give me Giannis. I think the problem with the Western Conference is that Golden State is extremely hobbled. Their two best players are hurt.
Yeah.
Klay Thompson isn't right yet, although he's shown some flashes recently. The Suns are going to roll to the finals,
agree.
I think. And I just think Giannis is the best player in the world right now. And when he's locked in and focused, I'll take him over anybody.
What do you got, KFC?
Bucks over Suns again for the same reason Waz just said. Giannis is the best player in the world, and he's just shown that Tuesday, Thursday game you and Ryan talked about on Sunday's pod, Bill.
Beautiful.
Back to back with Philadelphia and Brooklyn. He can turn it up whenever he needs to.
I had Suns over Bucks before the season, or Bucks over Suns. I can't even remember. But I'm not going to change that. But if I could change it, I would change it to Suns Celtics because I think the Celtics. I can't explain it. And I, as you know, I'm not a homer. I'm the first one to admit when the team sucks. Like, if anything, I swing too far both ways. My only homer moment might have been picking Marcus Smart for Defensive Player of the Year. But I really believe there was. I thought it was him or Bridges.
It was
I wanted to do a wing. I'm so tired of rewarding big guys. And it was going to be a perimeter person for me. Anyway, Waz.
It was Gobert. It was Gobert.
I can't do it. Waz, great to see you. KOC. You'll be back after this break, and we'll take a break. This episode is brought to you by SimpliSafe. Whenever someone mentions spring, you can't help but think of the word fresh. Spring brings fresh air, fresh beginnings, freshly cleaned homes. It's also a really great time to take a fresh look at SimpliSafe Home Security. I use it in my home and absolutely love it. By the way, summer's coming. No better time to maybe dip in to our friends at SimpliSafe than when you're leaving your house, your condo, your apartment, wherever you live. You're probably going to go somewhere for a while. Maybe it's a week. Maybe it's 2 weeks. Guess who's going to know that? Burglars. SimpliSafe, great because it protects your whole home. Uses advanced sensors and a variety of indoor and outdoor cameras. Keep watch over your property day and night. 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day. You can even check it out on your phone. Gives you peace of mind. You want peace of mind. Try SimpliSafe today. Risk-free, no contract, 60-day money-back guarantee. Get 20% off your system when you sign up for Fast Protect Monitoring at simplisafe.com/BS. That's simplisafe.com with two I's, simplisafe.com/BS. There's no safe like SimpliSafe. This episode is brought to you by Taco Bell. If you're anything like me during a busy day at work, I need lunch that is just as fresh as it is delicious and easy. And the all-new Cantina Chicken menu from Taco Bell is exactly that. Made with high-quality ingredients like seasoned slow-roasted chicken, pico de gallo, shredded purple cabbage, and avocado verde salsa sauce. The new Cantina Chicken Tacos, Burrito, and Quesadilla are the perfect daytime choice. Try
the new Cantina Chicken menu at Taco Bell now.
All right, Kevin O'Connor is here. We're taping this part of the podcast in the afternoon before we know the outcome of the play-in games, but we wanted to play a game called Now What. Before we do that, quick stuff on the Lakers. Since the season ended, they announced Vogel's getting fired. He's not even, I don't even think he had like taken off his tie in the locker room yet. They proactively leaked the Westbrook piece before the season even ends about what a disaster that is. Give some dirt on that. Nick Nurse's name gets thrown out. He's a clutch client. Toronto has him under contract. I have no idea why they would let one of the best five coaches in the league just go somewhere else when he's on a contract. The Lakers seem like they're flailing all the way around. But the big thing for me is just LeBron with a year left. We've never seen him in this situation before where he doesn't really have a lot of power because there's two things going on. One, how do you trade Westbrook? I tweeted yesterday. I was like, I just don't see it. Like, you can throw all these fake Westbrook trades at me. I don't see it. I think they're going to either have to buy him out or he's going to be like, F this, I'm staying, and just be super stubborn. But that's holding everything hostage on top of the LeBron thing. LeBron has no power. Is there any out here at all that you see? I know you talked about this yesterday, but for my audience, is there any outs?
Well, how about attaching one of those or two of those future draft picks, 2027 and 2029, to Russell Westbrook? Because you're right, like him alone, there's no value. There's nothing that makes sense. Verno and I have been talking about that since Mark Stein reported it. The idea of the Hornets and Michael Jordan wanting Russell Westbrook, it is ludicrous. I would lose my shit if I were a Hornets fan and we get Russell Westbrook and pair him with LaMelo Ball. It just doesn't make any sense.
You're trading Hayward and Rozier so you can have Westbrook for a year? Why would anyone do that?
No way. It doesn't make sense. What does make sense is if a team it says we want those future firsts, we'll give you a good player or good players in return for Russell Westbrook's salary, and then the buyout happens. Something like that makes some sense, but even then, getting to nearly $50 million in salary is not an easy thing to do. Granted, there will be a couple of teams with cap space, so there's not a lot of paths here for the Lakers. What's been on my mind with them, Bill, is if you're LeBron James, like everything we hear is that he's staying in L.A., that he's happy living here, his son in high school and all that. Family loves it. He loves it as well. You know, L.A. is great. But if you're LeBron, is there any part of you that's thinking about bouncing?
Well, his son's going to be a senior in high school, and he likes living in L.A., as you said. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, the season could start. It could just be a business decision where you're gone for 7 months on the last year of your contract. They would also have to agree that he can bounce. And if I'm them, why would I do that? You just made me trade all these picks and all these players for Anthony Davis. I still want to see what it looks like if both of you are on the court together. You're the one who told us we had to trade for Russell Westbrook. We did. Now you're asking us to use more picks in the future. You're going to be in year 20. You've missed 84 games over the last four seasons. What makes us think, you know, that we should mortgage even more of the future and the past and the present that we've already done to make you happy when you might leave in a year anyway? This is kind of what he did in Cleveland, right? In 2018, when he had that little, like almost like a work strike halfway through the year, when he wanted them to trade that pick that became Colin Sexton for help. And they kind of looked him in the eye and were like, we think you're leaving. We're not trading that pick. We're just not. So why would the Lakers trade picks to make him happy? I don't get that part. I think they have one play at KFC. I think you have to keep Westbrook. Either he comes back next season or you just keep him away, John Wall style. And I think you just have to hope when we get to January, February, that's an expiring contract. Half of it will have been paid already. And then you can flip it for stuff. And I think that's it. I think that's our only option. We've learned everybody can be traded, but I think that's the only realistic option.
So if you're the Lakers, you're not willing to attach either of those future first round picks in 27 or 29.
I'm not
willing to do it.
I'm unwilling to do it.
Even if it means getting rid of Westbrook and getting some solid return. And like,
who?
By solid,
who I mean, am
like,
I getting?
I mean, even if it's like a Julius Randle type, who is not a good player last season, but was all NBA 2 years ago. If it's something like that, is there some appeal for you to attach one of those first round picks?
It's like Derrick Rose and Evan Fournier is the kind of stuff they're looking at. And that's what people don't understand.
So in other words,
they're getting crap back for somebody's decision to take the Westbrook contract.
So if you're in Rob Pelinka's seat and LeBron comes to you, he's pissed off, he wants to trade, he wants to, you know, try to make the most of the time he has here in LA, you're saying, no, we're keeping our 27 and our 29 because we need to retain future flexibility. That's what you're doing in that case. And if that happens, though, how do you think LeBron responds? That brings me back to my thought here is if you're LeBron,
if what's he going to do? Not play?
Demand a sign and trade. I mean, demand a sign and trade with a free agent somewhere. Or for LeBron, he could just outright demand a trade this offseason.
Under contract. We just saw this happen with Tom Brady in Tampa Bay. We just saw this happen. He wanted to go to San Francisco or Miami. They stared him down and they're like, no. So he's like, I'm going to retire. They're like, cool.
Because why would you trade Tom Brady?
30
why
days
would you trade
pass.
LeBron James, right?
30 days pass and they waited out. And what they did was they leveraged his desire to still be great, to still be in the limelight, to still try to set records and all that stuff. And they knew he was going to come back. And with the Lakers, LeBron has no leverage. What, he's going to be like, I'll sit out. It's like, you will? You're trying to break the scoring title.
So you're just going to
hand away games for no reason?
So if you're the Lakers, you're not willing to attach the 27 or the 29 first.
I am not.
To a deal like Rice, but you're also not willing to trade LeBron James. Does that mean you would then be willing to look into moving AD?
I'd be more willing to do that because I don't know what I have with AD. He's year 11 next year, right?
And always hurt.
He's not the guy. 3 years ago, we were in Vegas. Remember when that trade went down? I think as we were leaving, and it was like, oh my God, this guy's 25. Jesus. Holy shit. This sucks. Now this is going to be Wilt Kareem Shaq. Now he's going to be 29. He's going to be year 11. And I don't know if he could stay in the court. And I heard what he said about, the reason I didn't get to be more injured because I was in such awesome shape. I didn't see a guy who looked like he was in awesome shape this year. I saw a guy that was carrying too much weight and is somebody that's going to keep getting hurt.
And so, his jumper hasn't been the same ever since the bubble. I mean, like he that was an outlier stretch, the way he shot in those empty arenas in Orlando. Other than that, he's been incredibly inconsistent, low 30%. So if he's not hitting jumpers, it changes the what the Lakers could be on the offensive end in the half court.
I think they jumped the gun with the Westbrook stuff. I thought they were going to wait till the summer and try to make it seem like he's great. This is going to be awesome while secretly trying to trade him. They went the other way. They were like, nobody wants to trade for this guy. Let's try to go after him now to the point that he's like, I got to get out of here. I might even take the buyout just to get me out of here.
Who would want Russ on?
Nobody. Nobody like, wants
well,
him.
Well, not the money he's making now.
Not one team. Nobody. Not even,
what about league minimum? Who wants him in that case? Like, let's just say the lowest salary possible. Who would want Russ? Who's lining up first?
I went through all the teams and I could not figure it out. Because
Orlando, because they have all those guards.
If you're a young team, why would you want him? If you're a mid-range team, you're going to have to give something up to get him. Like somebody like the Knicks, Charlotte, people in that range. Then if it's a team that wants to dump salary, all the contracts are shorter. Nobody really has to dump salary in the same way, you know? So now you look at a team like Portland, I guess would be the only possibility.
Back
if they're
up
throwing
team.
Away next season too, and it's like, all right, one year Russ, we'll get some more picks out of it. But it goes back to my initial thing. I don't think the Lakers have to give up picks. I would
How about
rather
the Wizards. Get him back with Beal. Beal really liked Russ. Tommy Shepard liked Russ. Russ liked Washington.
But now they have to put contracts in that trade, though.
Well, I mean, I'm saying like if it were like a buyout situation, but even if it were a trade, we could talk trade reversal.
I thought he was way worse this season. Oh, didn't you feel like the guy we saw this season, almost a little bit like James Harden, was a different guy than this season a year ago? Somebody would say like, well, it was the confidence. He was in the wrong situation. I saw somebody that didn't quite have the same athleticism. His shot was worse. And all of the bad things about him, like his defense, his ability to play off the ball, all that stuff is just magnified as he gets older. And I just think he's a losing player. I honestly think he's a losing player.
All season long, I was saying how he needs to change for the Lakers to have any chance. And, you know, people said I was crazy for saying, even suggesting that Russ can change.
Yeah,
I mean, it is crazy. It was crazy to suggest that. Did you watch his exit interview with the media? He just doesn't get it.
That's the worst thing for his trade value is that interview where it's like, none of this is my fault.
He says,
I don't know why the coach didn't like me.
it's a bad season if I don't have a triple double. It's like, dude, it's not about the numbers. It's about cutting. It's about playing and focusing on defense. That's what this Lakers right. team needed. And he's like, oh, I did everything I could. Some I forget who asked him it, but someone said, what does sacrifice mean to you? And he's like, it's about doing what's best for the team. And I feel like I did my best. I don't think he did. And I just don't think he gets it. I don't think he sees where he is at this point of his career and what he could be and needs to be to contribute to winning basketball. Because we're talking about all these potential fits for him. Like the fact that nobody would want to trade for Russell Westbrook says a lot. Like, despite all the knocks about him over the years, despite some of the choke games, despite some of the shot selection, this guy authored unbelievable moments throughout his career. When Brett Favre was near the end, teams were happy to get him. The Vikings got him. The Jets yeah. got him. Brett Favre had those great highs and those great lows. I like to think about Russ as the NBA's Brett Favre. He's had those peaks, but he's had those really disastrous moments. The fact we're already at this point, Bill, I think that he is really the face of these players, some players who aren't able to adapt. We have seen the opposite side. We've seen Carmelo Anthony. We've seen Dwight Howard in his own locker room. We've seen Vince Carter. Russ just isn't one of those guys, unfortunately. It's sad.
Yeah, it's either his way or the highway.
It's too bad. And I just think really too bad.
If they bring him back with a new coach and they pretend, oh, well, you know, new start, fresh start, and we just want, you know, we want to put Russ in it, do all the fakes. And then by December, they can probably trade him.
Because disaster.
What they need some teams to be disappointed with the teams they have and the contracts they have, looking for like the balloon expiring contract where they can maybe dump a salary or two. I mean, we're going to play now what in a second, but a team like Utah, they might decide, let's blow it up. We'll trade Mitchell. We'll get a bunch of stuff. We'll trade Gobert. We'll get a bunch of stuff. We'll dump the rest of our contracts for an expiring Westbrook and we'll just bottom out for 1 year and we'll come back in a year. Like that's their only scenario, but they're not going to decide that now.
You sure about Russ in Utah? You sure?
That would probably convince them to take the buyout. I don't want to go there. I don't like Utah.
Yeah.
All right. So our predictions, you predict Russ is going to get traded this summer. I give you a Russ trade, LeBron trade, Davis trade. You think Russ is the guy?
Yeah, I'd pick a Russ trade and they attach a pick or both picks and it's a bigger deal. I think they're going to get creative. That's what I think. No way they keep him. No way.
I think they drag it perilously close to the season. And if it ends with them icing him for 3 months, John Wall style, I think that's what they do. Mm. I don't think they attach the picks. I think Jeannie Buss is in the F this moment of this whole thing. When the stuff they tried to do at All-Star Weekend and after, I think was a huge mistake from the LeBron side. All the people they floated out, not great. All right, now what? So this is a little game for the teams in the play-in in the first round. If the season just ends abruptly and horribly, who's in the now what situation of all of those teams? I am going to cross off Milwaukee and Phoenix because I think there's no chance they lose in round one. You good with that?
0% chance. I agree with you in round one. I'm there.
Okay. We're crossing them off. The Celtics, they lose to Brooklyn. Let's say we're taping this before the playing games. They lose to Brooklyn or they lose to whoever in round one. What is the now what for them? Because I think that it was so encouraging what happened from January 1st on that they will look at this and go, well, bad luck. We had to play those guys in round one. We still love what we did. The only real decision they have is Horford. $14.5 million, they can buy him out. 27, keep him, roll him over as an expiring. What's the now what with them, you think?
I mean, with this team, you talked with Ryan on Sunday's pod about Robert Williams. Are we assuming he's not in this series, a first round loss?
I would bet on seeing him versus not seeing him.
I think there's a chance. There's a lot of optimism. It sounds like this meniscus surgery wasn't super major.
I think we see him by midway through, would be my guess. It's my guess. Don't aggregate me.
Yeah, I think with Boston, the now what would definitely relate to Al Horford in this situation. $26.5 million expiring contract. We've seen Grant Williams be a very effective switch defender, a very effective corner three-point shooter. Granted, a different type of player than Horford. He plays a very similar role with what he's asked to do on offense and defense. maybe you're using that Horford salary with other future assets, draft picks, young players, and trying to bolster that front court. Other than that, I struggle to look at this roster and think, now what? Like, what are you going to do with Tatum Brown? You're keeping that together. What are you going to do with Marcus Smart? You're keeping him. You're keeping White. You're keeping Time Lord, unless it's like a Rudy Gobert type of thing. But even then, you're probably keeping Time Lord at $10.1 million next season and moving forward instead of paying a big $35, $40 million. So, like, really, the only now what on this roster got to be Al Horford.
And I think it's a trade because it could be a team that wants to get off an expensive contract knowing that they could just buy out Horford for $14 million. I think Horford was really valuable for them, and I like him either coming back or as a $27 million expiring. Memphis. Let's say Minnesota wins the play-in game or the Clippers, taping this for the play-in game, and all of a sudden, Memphis' season goes to hell. And it would be a now what in the sense of, wait a second, I thought we were making a run at this here. Now what? To me, the now what for them is a 3-for-1. And I think we should just throw Atlanta in this too. Those are the two teams that feel 3-for-1-y for me. But you can make the case Memphis just does nothing and says, we had a great year. It's too bad Ja got hurt right before. We lost a little momentum with that. What is the now what in your opinion?
When you say 3-for-1, you mean like trades?
Yeah.
Consolidation.
Yeah, consolidation trade.
Okay, I mean, because they have 15 good players.
Right.
And they have picks coming in. So
maybe it's a 6-for-1.
I mean, that effectively might have to be that, considering the amount of roster spots. But I think with Memphis, this season at 56-26, 20-5 without Ja Morant, the fact that they're in this place is the 2 seed. The now what is really, in my opinion, just more of the same here. Unless there's the right deal that makes sense, finding somebody who's on that similar timeline as Ja Morant and Desmond Bane and Jaren Jackson Jr., I'm perfectly okay with sitting on my hands here if you're Grizzlies general manager Zach Kleiman with the position that you're in. If you rush things, that could end up hurting you 3 or 4 years from now as Morant and Bane, you would hope, are hitting their peaks of their careers. With that said, though,
they have picks too, right? Don't they have at least 2 first-rounders?
They do have picks. So, I mean, they aren't getting the one that would have went to them if it were from the Lakers. Now, because the Lakers fell out of playoffs, they're not getting that. But for Memphis here, though, I am curious, though, Bill, because like we talk about this team. I just said 3 or 4 years from now, when those guys are entering their peaks, windows can close fast. Injuries happen. So for Memphis, should there be some urgency this offseason going into next year with Ja and Bane, another year older, Jackson, maybe defensive player of the year next season if he doesn't get it this year?
I think so. Kyle Anderson's a free agent, and I think they have too many players. Just in general, I just don't think you need this man. I think it really helped this season. It was one of the reasons they had the 2 seed because it was
totally
the weird COVID season. But long term, like I just look at that Kyle Anderson spot and it's like, what's the rich man's version of that? Who could they add to the team who's like a facilitator, almost like a Gordon Hayward type, right? If Gordon Hayward could stay in the 4, but is there a way using him leaving plus some of the assets they have and even the picks to get somebody who's kind of a kick-ass version of Kyle Anderson in that spot. And I like Kyle Anderson, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's 6'9", Kyle Anderson.
Or could Zaire Williams be that guy?
Yeah, and he could be. I think Zaire Williams is probably the most overlooked rookie because everybody's looking at Memphis with Ja and Bane and Jackson and even like Steven Adams. But Zaire Williams, meanwhile, a rookie defending Steph Curry, doing a great job night in, night out on the defensive end of the floor, contributing offensively, playing his role. Like he could turn into that guy. But I think to your point, finding that forward who can provide some scoring ability is really going to be the key for them. And with Memphis, they have right now the 22nd pick and the 29th pick. So maybe the consolidation that you're talking about with them happens on draft night where they've had such a strong draft record. Maybe this is the year that they consolidate both of those firsts with a player or two to move up to 14 or 15 and target the guy that they actually have in mind.
Yeah, good point. All right, we'll take a break, then we'll do the rest of the teams. This episode is brought to you by LinkedIn. Closing the deal can be a real challenge sometimes. Like, remember when the Celtics, once upon a time, could have traded Kevin McHale for Sam Perkins and Detlef Schrempf to Dallas? It became a big what if because it would have made the Celtics younger, it would have made them better. but they also would have broken up the big three. They would have broken up Bird and Parrish and McHale. So would we have won the title if we did that trade? Probably not. I'm kind of glad they kept Kevin McHale, but, you know, we lost out on a chance to really get younger. You know, another place where it could be a struggle to get a win, not just with trades, B2B selling. But luckily, you can use LinkedIn Sales Navigator. It's a sales intelligence platform that helps you target the right customers to drive revenue and grow your business so you can start selling like a superstar. Maybe Detlef Schrempf would have become a superstar in the Celtics. We'll never know. Try LinkedIn Sales Navigator now with a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/Bill Simmons. This episode is brought to you by Nissan SUV. It's good to stay up to date. I mean, we've seen this in basketball, we've seen it in football, we've seen it in baseball. Once the stats started taking off in the 2000s, everybody had to figure that out. Then I remember in basketball, first it was three-pointers, then it was defensive stats. You just got to keep moving, you got to keep evolving, you got to keep going. Now it's pace and threes. What's it going to be next, big guys? That's why the 2024 Nissan Rogue has Google built right into its 12.3-inch touchscreen infotainment system. With Google Maps, Assistant, and more, you can stay up to date on everything that's ahead without even needing to connect your phone. Find your next adventure with the Nissan SUV. Learn more about the Rogue, Pathfinder, and Armada SUVs at NissanUSA.com. All right, now what? We're keeping this going. This one's interesting. Miami. So Miami's going to be in the 1-8. They're probably going to win. They'll be heavily favored. But let's say something goes bad. Let's say they lose. Let's say Atlanta gets in there as the 8 seed. And then they go on another bender like they did last year. And it's like, uh-oh, what's going on with Atlanta? And all of a sudden they're winning a series. The now what has to be Butler for them, right? That's the one. I find it hard to believe if these playoffs don't go well for them that he's not going to be in some trade stuff. Just some spidey senses. What have you heard?
Did you see the Joe Vardon report on The Athletic today?
I sure did.
What's your take on that?
Do you think
there's something there?
I think he tapped into stuff that's been floating around since that thing that happened on the bench.
How much of this is just teams trying to stir it up? To try to like spring loose a star and what could be a pretty stagnant summer. How much of it is that?
I'm glad you asked that, KFC. I remember when we started working together and we talked a couple times about what was going to happen in your career and things to watch out for. And one of the things, remember we talked about watch out people trying to give you information. What's their agenda with the information?
Yeah.
Like always put yourself in their shoes. Why are they telling you this? So with the Butler thing, that the red flags are up with that. Because other teams, of course, they're going to be interested in Heat dissension and Jimmy Butler trade rumors. That's great for all the other teams of the league. They're the one seed. With that said, I still think that thing was pretty weird. I know you and Verno talked about it too. I'm willing to throw away 98 to 99% of on-court people getting heated with each other. I felt like that was in the 1%. It went too far. It was really weird. And when a coach stands up and is like, you want to fight me? Like that's, it's gone to another level. I'm sorry. That was not just like a heated 20-second thing.
So with Butler, like for years, we're talking like about the stuff you hear like around the league. For years, we heard about Butler wanting Miami.
Right.
We heard about it at the time the deal happened. He didn't get it. He goes to Philadelphia, but he eventually ends up there. Maybe he gets there and he is unhappy about it, but I think it was probably just a blip in all likelihood. Just based off the conversations I've had, but who knows? Maybe things are worse than I understand. But for this team, though, the what if has to be him, though, because you're talking about somebody who is 32 years old. You know, still a great player, still all NBA type of guy. You have Kyle Lowry there, but if there's opportunities to trade up, because what we just talked about with Memphis about consolidation, you could also say about Miami, like they're starting Max Strus over Duncan Robinson. Like they have those two sharpshooters. You can move one of them. There's options on this team. You have a lot of depth. You have Caleb Martin. You have Markieff Morris. You have Victor Oladipo. This is a deep team. So there's options here for them to consolidate as well if there's an opportunity to get a better player than Butler. I'm not trading down from Butler. I'm only moving up. The question is, like, is there anybody even available that would make sense for the Heat even if Butler were unhappy? I'm not so sure about that.
Yeah, and Robinson, if you're saying, like, if I had to bet my life on it, what do I think happened? Robinson is probably the more likely trade candidate because he's expensive. And honestly, it seems like they can fill his minutes pretty easily, you know?
Strus Especially, is good, man.
Strus is good. He lit up the Celtics a couple weeks ago, but ironically, he was on the Celtics for a brief cup of coffee. And then Hero's playing more than I think they probably expected to, you know?
If they were to move Butler, or let's just say Butler were unhappy, whatever it might be, what would that mean for Kyle Lowry? Because he goes there because of his friendship with Jimmy Butler. Like, is this the type of situation?
Yeah, he went there because it was Florida, Miami, and Pat Riley, and Spoelstra. Like, there were other reasons.
He's like besties with Jimmy Butler. Those guys are really close, like legitimately friends. Not just, you know, I don't think it was just Miami.
This can't happen, but it would be the most fun thing ever. If there was a Westbrook Butler and the Lakers adding 27-29 and Miami sticking them with another salary or just, I know it can't happen, but it would just be hilarious to see. It would be Butler's final destiny playing with LeBron, the guy who has either been hit or miss with more teammates than any star we've had in the last 20 years. And Butler, who's had more dissension at every stop, and just putting those together would be absolutely incredible.
Well, and then Russell Westbrook gets, you know, goes to Miami.
Heat culture.
And we're going to salvage him. Focus on defense. He's cutting to the basket. He's getting his triple-double too. Yeah. Why not?
I don't want to make it seem like I don't value those 27 and 29 Laker picks. That's my whole reason that I don't think they should trade them, because LeBron will be gone by then. And mm-hmm. I don't know what Davis is going to look like 2 years from now, much less five. And they're going to have no ability to kind of that. Those picks might be two top five picks. So to trade that because you think there's a puncher's chance you can get a five seed next year. Like, I don't see it. Golden State, $171 million on the books next year, right now. Brutal. And I'm not even including like whatever minimum contracts and things like that. I would assume if they get bounced in round one, or even like if they lose in five in round two or whatever, the fact that they're not deep enough at the center spot would be at least one of the reasons. So I would assume they either have to shit or get off the pot with Wes Wiseman at that point, right?
Yeah. So if it's about the center spot, how do you improve that center spot? Are you talking about trading some of these younger guys, Kuminga, Moody, or are you more looking at free agency with some of the guys that might be out there over the summer? Like this year's class could be Nurkic, Mitchell Robinson, Montrezl Harrell, Andre Drummond, Isaiah Hartenstein, Mo Bamba. Just Ooh, some names.
Isaiah Hartenstein's available?
He'll be a free agent. I mean,
is he tough. Unrestricted?
I believe he's restricted.
I like that guy.
Yeah, he's a really good player.
I mean, I won't like him when somebody's paying him $12 million a year, but if you could get him for five, I would totally
get him for 12. 12's okay, Bill, for Hartenstein. He's a really good backup.
Man, that's a lot. I don't like paying. Even Time Lord may be nervous, but that turned out to be a good
contract. I mean, if you're the Warriors, though, I mean, what path are you going? Are you going the free agency path, or are you trying to trade some of those young guys and get like a really, like it was floated out earlier today, Gobert as a target for Golden State? Just a theoretical target.
Come on. What does he make? Like $40 million a year?
I know. I'm just like saying as a theoretical, are you going for a big deal? Are you going for a trade here to get a five?
I think that's the that's the easiest position to find bodies who are competent. Like, look at the Celtics. Like, Tice, like a throw-in trade at the last minute. Now he's playing in the playoffs. I do feel like there's like 15 guys like that. I just think they need... Wiseman was the guy they were counting on for those minutes, and he's just 2 years in a row hasn't been able to deliver them. They need somebody. I think Looney's going to... If I was a Warriors fan, I'd be so scared Looney was going to break down. Because the amount of miles, I think he might have. Did he play every game? He's played every game or close.
It's incredible. Well, and after all the injuries,
he's been banged up
suffered
over the years.
I mean, yeah, the hip injuries he had back at UCLA. It's remarkable that he actually ended up playing 82.
I'm going to save Philly for last. Dallas, they have $151 million on the books next year in the Brunson thing. There's not a lot of moves for them except Brunson. Is Brunson a sign and trade guy for you?
100%. Brunson's a sign and trade guy, and he should have value to a lot of different teams. And I think for Dallas, they're in a position where I'd be looking for, like we just said with Golden State, a true five. I mean, you do really well with Dwight Powell at the five, but if you can get another big that can play with Powell or alone, then that's really the ideal for this team here. And if you can sign and trade Brunson to get that guy, that to me is the number one priority for the Mavericks this offseason, regardless really of how the playoffs go.
Agree. Toronto, I think they're fine. I mean, they have Boucher's, he's out, as or at least they could resign him, I guess. But I think they like the core. I don't see them doing anything nuts, do you?
No, I don't think they should do anything nuts. But
no, I agree.
Mean, that, I don't want to get repetitive, but another big over Ken Birch, yeah, that'd be nice.
Whatever, well. Those guys are available.
Nothing dramatic.
Same thing for Denver. I think they chalk this year up to, oh, we didn't have Porter and Murray. Next year we do. Let's see what we have. I don't think they do anything crazy. They haven't had their four guys together really for more than, what, 3 weeks?
No, yeah.
Chicago.
This
are we sure Zach LaVine's resigning there?
I haven't heard anything to indicate otherwise.
Would you bet your life on it?
No, of course not. Especially after he had to take a backseat to DeMar DeRozan. I could see his circle, you know, saying to Zach LaVine, you can be the guy somewhere else. But for the next 2 years here in Chicago, you're going to be in number two behind DeMar DeRozan. I could definitely see something like that. Another sign and trade potential guy. And I think for the Bulls here, assuming that they do lose round one after this horrific end of the season, after their great start, for them, you could look at it two ways. You get back Lonzo Ball, you get back Alex Caruso, and that can help fix your defense and get you back to what you were at the beginning of the season. But there's no guarantees in that, though. There's no guarantees that it happens. There's no guarantees Patrick Williams makes a leap on the offensive end of the floor and becomes the guy you need at the four. So if you're Chicago, you have to take advantage of this window. You have to take advantage of DeRozan playing at the level he is. To me, like everybody and everything should be available on this team. Like I'm looking, if I'm them, I'm thinking about Anthony Davis. What does it take to get him if he wanted to go home to Chicago? He already hinted at that in past years of wanting to play there someday. Would you be willing to trade Lonzo and Vooch to get AD? That's the type of thing that I'm thinking about to fortify your defense. Because as much as the Lakers, you know, struggled this year, if you look at the minimum possessions defended in the pick and roll, AD was still number one in allowing points per chance in the pick and roll this year. He's still a great defender despite falling off a little bit. Maybe physically. So for Chicago, I think there's logic there in going for a guy like that to really hold down your defense. Just go for it all.
I like it, KOC. I think it's going to take more than just those two guys, though.
Oh, yeah,
I
mean, you're going to have to get picks, too. Picks as well. I'm just talking, it's like a foundation with the names and a deal.
Interesting.
Vooch, Lonzo, some picks. Maybe that resets the Lakers, and it gives you the defense you need next to DeMar, and hopefully you keep Zach LaVine, too.
Kyle, turn the camera on. What if Embiid starts texting LaVine? Hey, man. What's going on? How you doing? Just a little relationship going. You really going to be DeRozan's number two? Why don't you come here? Let's try to... James might leave. I don't know what's going to happen. And all of a sudden, we start heading toward like a Harden-LaVine sign and trade swap. If Harden, if the Philly thing, if everyone decides this sucked, this isn't going to work out. If Chicago's like, oh, we might lose LaVine anyway. Harden for LaVine, just as a thought experiment, what repels you from that idea?
Zero. I'm very much into that idea because the version of James Harden we've seen since three games out of the All-Star break is not a James Harden that I want to give $200+ million to.
You were adamant when we did the 17-part trade deadline pod. You were like, I love James freaking Harden. And you were right. You were like, I love this guy. My only hesitation was like, are we sure we're getting that James Harden? And the more I watch him, I just don't think we're getting that James Harden. That guy might be gone.
I had Nate Jones on my pod last week, and we talked about Harden, and he brought up the comparison to Chris Paul. Chris Paul, his last year in Houston, everybody's talking like he's done with the hamstring issues that he had. Then he changes everything that he does with the way he rests and recovers. He invests more money into his body. And then he comes back and he's really had no issues since. I don't think we can rule that out with James Harden either. Like the guy, his peak abilities, if he just changes what he does, you can get more out of Harden moving forward. The question is he willing to do that? Like with Chris Paul, there was never a question about his partying habits and his nights out. With James Harden, there is that question, lifestyle questions. So with that in mind, like for Philadelphia, if you're Daryl Morey, like you did everything it took to get James Harden. But after everything you've seen, and assuming this continues into the first round and the playoffs, you have to be thinking about the possibilities of either re-signing him and then eventually looking to move him, or just outright sign and trade this offseason. Because if you're getting this Harden for the next 5 years at $200 million, you're never going to win a championship with Joel Embiid playing at an MVP level.
Well, or what if he just leaves? And what do you do then? And can you attach Harris and try to create cap space for Zach LaVine? Here's why I mentioned this. I don't mean to cause a panic. I don't want Jason Goff, our guy who hosts the Full Go and the Ringer Podcast Network Chicago Pod. Although I do want to go on his podcast, throw this here at him. I don't like when guys are about to become a free agent and they're on a team that is obviously something's wrong. And there's obviously something wrong with the Chicago team. I don't know what it is, but we watched this happen in Boston in 2019, right? The team got unhappier as the year went along, had some bad luck, some injuries, and all of a sudden it became conceivable Kyrie might leave. And it didn't seem conceivable, and then it started to become conceivable. LaVine hasn't said anything. I'm a tea leaves guy, and I'm watching this, and I'm like, what happens if Milwaukee sweeps them in round one? Is Zach being like, cool, I'm back, baby? Or is he, look around, he'd be the hottest girl at the dance. You know, he would immediately become the top free agent. So, and that's the thing with Harden. He would also become one of the top free agents. So I just think we have to watch that. All right, we mentioned Philly. Philly does have $153 million on the books next year. They have the Tobias Harris thing too, which would be the fallback plan if they can't figure out the Harden thing. Just quickly going through the play-in teams. Brooklyn's got the Kyrie decision. Bruce Brown's a free agent. I don't even want to speculate on Brooklyn. Who knows? Minnesota, I think they run it back with whatever they have. I don't really see, you know, they're not in the luxury tax. Russell's going to be an expiring next year. They probably see where that's going. Cleveland's got Sexton as a restricted free agent, but he's coming off a major injury. I'm sure they'll figure that out. Love's an expiring. That's a possible Al Horford combo. Clippers are stuck with who they have, $159 million. I don't really see a path for them other than bringing back Hartenstein. Atlanta, we mentioned as a 3-for-1 trade, no question. They're like the ceiling basement team of all the playing teams. I don't know what to make of how that goes. New Orleans has the Zion thing. Charlotte has Bridges as a restricted, and they're at $100 million. So they might have room for at least some free agent. Hayward's 30 and 31.
They need a big.
Yeah, they need a big. Yeah. And they might have the room to actually get the big. And then San Antonio's at $82 million. Pop might retire and could at least be a stalking horse in the James Harden thing or the Zach LaVine thing if those guys decide they're unhappy. Any storyline I missed out of all those?
I don't know. I think with the Spurs, like they're in a position now where they're just missing the guy. Like they're not necessarily a star destination. But I'm intrigued by a team just deciding, screw it, we're going to trade all of this for player X who becomes available this offseason, because the Spurs, like DeJounte Murray averaging 24 points, 10 assists, 8 rebounds his last 40 games while playing all defense. He was outstanding for the Spurs. He's made a leap. You have Keldon Johnson, Devin Vassell, Jakob Poeltl. They have a lot of talent on that team. They're just missing the guy next to DeJounte Murray. So I'm thinking about teams like that that could cash in some chips and go get that player, and then study propel themselves forward up into, you know, a top four, top five seed. The Spurs seem like one of those teams geared to do that. With the Pelicans, my only question with them is, you mentioned the Zion thing. Is there any logic to New Orleans saying, you know what, screw it, we don't want to deal with the Zion stuff, we're going to trade him for this massive trade package rather than giving him the money and the extension? Is there any logic to that?
I would play it out and do the restricted free agent dance.
Oh, you play
him.
It out. You wouldn't give him the money this offseason.
I would not.
Really? So you're playing it out and risking that he goes and signs that qualifying offer and then 1 year.
Great. I can match it. Unless he does the thing where he basically passes up his ability to.
That's what I mean. Like then in 2024, he would become a unrestricted free agent if he were to do that.
I don't think he's going to do that. I think I think it's too much money. We haven't seen anybody roll the dice with that. And he's somebody that's already played, what, 40% of his career?
What do you get for Zion? If you put a guy who averaged nearly 30 points per game, can pass the ball, just an absolute dominant force. If you put a guy like that on the table with all his injury concerns, like if you're doing your trade value, you call him, how high up
he's
is
not
Zion?
In the top 10.
That's what I mean. He should be, but he's not because the injuries.
I mentioned on previous pods that nobody's ever walked away before from the max, or nobody's been traded before they got the max pass. Like, it's just the team always either keeps it. It happened with Porzingis. I forgot. The Knicks actually proactively said, fuck this, and they traded him before he even had a chance to do the max, and then he ended up, Dallas took care of him. The rest was history. I'd be really nervous about trading him.
Oh, yeah.
I'd also be really, really even... I think I would be more nervous to trade for him than I would be to trade him. How about that?
Knowing the price that it would take.
The price it would take and having no clue if he gets it on how to stay in shape, because his weight is going up and down by 40-point swings right now.
I heard it's back up,
by the way.
If you're the Blazers and let's say you move up onto the number one pick.
You can't. You have the Odin Walton. You can't. Brandon Roy. You can't. You're the haunted house. You can't have a guy like that.
Is there a team that you'd be willing to give with the number one pick for Zion and more?
The number one pick?
The number one pick. So Chet, Paolo Banchero, Jabari Smith,
no,
plus more.
I would
no?
Rather have those three guys than Zion. I would also rather have like six guys in this draft we just had than Zion. Right?
Would you rather have
Kuminga or Zion? I'd rather have Kuminga.
I'd rather have Zion easily because the upside is just so massive with him. I know the downside is too, but like it's so rare that you could get a guy who looked like a Hall of Famer in year two of his career. Like the upside of Zion Williamson is competing for championships every single year that you have him. That's the upside. I'm not sure.
I get it, but I think I'm older than you is the problem, and which means I'm more risk averse. But I've also seen this play before with NBA players. We're like, yeah, but if he just, and, you know, the best case scenario for something like this would be like Chris Webber. But Chris Webber was even older, and he had at least played 70, 75 game seasons. Zion, I don't know if he gets it.
Like yeah, it's scary.
He's not in shape. I've heard the stories about like fitness, conditioning, like what he eats. I just don't think he gets it.
I mean, that's the scary part here for New Orleans, because David Griffin has built a really good team. He's built a really good roster with Ingram and Jones on the wing. Yeah. That backcourt they have with CJ McCollum.
And they have Alvarado. A lot of picks.
They have so many picks. They have a good front court. They have Larry Nance coming off the bench. Valanciunas, a really good starting center. Jackson Hayes has been good starting for them. Herb Jones, one of the better defenders in all of the NBA as a rookie. Trey Murphy's come along in the back half of this year off their bench as a rookie as well. So this New Orleans team, all they're missing is Zion or another star. And I think for them, like the decision that they're going to have to make this offseason, giving him the money or not, it's not easy to do here, because it's not like he's all you have. The Pelicans have a lot else on their roster that's good and encouraging for their
future.
And
a ton of picks.
Forward.
And these many. Laker picks that might be awesome, way better picks than I think we even expected. I'm really nervous about Zion. I think we have a really extended sample size at this point, and I don't think we're in a good place with it. I was watching, somebody sent me some Duke highlights of him, and it's like watching another human being. And unless you can tell me he can get back to that weight or close, and you know for sure he can do it, and that the people around him are going to be focused on it, the whole thing, I just would be really nervous. On the other hand, if I'm a team like the Knicks and I'm going nowhere and I can get rid of Randall in the trade and throw some picks in, and you know, it would be hard not to consider that. But I think the Knicks are focused on Mitchell. Is my guess.
Did that highlight package you got sent include that dunk he had on the corner three? I think it was a DeAndre Hunter three-pointer, if I remember correctly. Did it include that way? He just kind of flew from from the paint all the way to the corner three. It's absurd.
That's the thing. He's like one of the all-time freak athletes we've ever had. But you have to, you know, there's a reason Giannis is going to be in the top three in the MVP again. And there's a reason he feels like he's getting better. Like that guy, all he's done is devote himself to being awesome at basketball. And we just haven't seen it with Zion. We don't know. I don't know if he has that in him. Giannis had it. You talk to anyone with the Bucks, from the moment he showed up, he had it. And, you know, as I get older and I watch what makes these guys succeed versus what makes them not succeed, it's that extra piece of like just that constant day-to-day desire to just be great.
That clip of Giannis, you're talking about the one recently, right? Where he's talking about the growth mindset, control what you can control. That's the one you're referring to with him?
Well, there was another one floating around about when he was a kid. He looks like he's like 12, but he's on the Bucks. And they're like, what do you want? He's like, I want to be the MVP someday. Yeah, and everybody laughs.
Yeah.
Because it seemed inconceivable. But that guy, from the moment he showed up, was like completely possessed. And I don't know. I thought Zion was getting it last year, but now I'm concerned. All right, we're gonna take a break. Come back with Eddie Johnson, KOC. A pleasure to see you as always. Thanks for doing the double duty today.
Thank you, Bill.
All right, that's it for the podcast. Thanks to KOC. Thanks to Waz. Thanks to Kyle Creighton, our producer. Thanks to Steve Cerruti and Dylan Berkey as well. I had a whole thing I did with Eddie Johnson today, but we went so long with all the other stuff. I'm going to run that on Thursday. Sorry, Eddie. You weren't bumped. I just wanted to give you the proper amount of time. Eddie is the Suns announcer. He's on the show with Justin Termini on the NBA channel on Sirius, and he had a great career. But we had a really good talk about the Suns and a lot of stuff. So I didn't want to have a 2-hour-plus podcast when there's so much going on. So we'll run Eddie on Thursday. Sorry, Eddie, you weren't bumped. I just wanted to give you the spotlight. Don't get mad at me. We'll be back on this podcast on Thursday. See you then.